the fourth Sunday of Easter, around about the midpoint or so we are now in our Easter journey, this beautiful Easter season. Fourth Sunday every single year in A, B, or C of the rotating lectionary cycle is devoted to John chapter 10, the first verses, first 30 or so verses of it. And in those verses, we hear the beautiful image in which Jesus identifies himself with the Good Shepherd. "I am the Good Shepherd," he says. We heard it today beautifully proclaimed in the Gospel. So since every year this is the focus, this shepherd identity and image, this is called Good Shepherd Sunday. That's the focus all the time. Which explains, therefore, why the collect, the opening prayer, is worded like it is. It's beautiful. I'll offer it again in case we missed it, just to repeat it. It goes with the Sunday's theme so nicely. "Almighty ever-living God, lead us to a share in the joys of heaven, that the humble flock may reach where the brave shepherd has gone before. Lead us to a share in the joys of heaven, that the humble flock may reach where the brave shepherd has gone before." Is that not beautiful? Just a beautiful, beautiful collect, right? So who we are, the humble flock, following our brave, brave shepherd, all the way to the glory of the heavenly kingdom. So this image of Good Shepherd has to be unpacked, I think. That's what the church wants us to do this Sunday every single year in different ways. So how does one do that? So we have to do this in pieces, and to do it and really grab hold, I'd say, of the nature of the good news, why it really is good news that we have a Good Shepherd, one must back up a little bit and take this in some pieces and walk our way through how one understands it, right? Jesus, in calling himself Good Shepherd and making this his identity for his audience and for us even today, is doing something. He's drawing from two different kind of places. One, he's drawing from his cultural standpoint and time period. Shepherding was common in that time, in that part of the world. Goats and sheep were all over the place, led by shepherds. You go there today to the Holy Land, you can see them. They're not as romantic as you might think. They're mainly the Bedouins who run the shepherding industry there, and they're kind of scattered around. But they're there, all right? So it's part of their culture. So it's an image they would have understood, and they would have got it. He's always great at talking in the language of his contemporaries. So he's drawing on a familiar image, yes. He's also pulling, though, from an important image of the Old Testament, because for a long, long time, for centuries and centuries, it was the idea that the kings, David and his successors, were to shepherd the people Israel. The rulers were the shepherds. And oftentimes they were not good shepherds, and they were told so by their advisors and by the prophets. But that was the idea. King was to be a shepherd for the flock of the people. It's an image in the Psalms. It's an image in the prophets. It's picked up all over the place. So Jesus is standing in the line of a long tradition of what it means to speak about God and his people, Israel and the shepherd, either the earthly ones or the heavenly one who is God the Most High. That's what he's doing, okay? Now, as I said, though, this takes some unpacking, and it's maybe a bit unpleasant at first, but we must go through this to get to the good news, all right? Unpacking goes like this, so part one, right? Think about this. If he's the good shepherd, that makes us sheep. Nobody really likes to be called a sheep, you know? Think about that. I mean, take the image very seriously, right? He is calling us, he's labeling all of us, he's identifying all of us as sheep. What are sheep like? You know how this goes. They don't know how to take care of themselves. They're not sure where they belong in terms of their surroundings. They need guidance. They need protection. They need help. They need leaders. Were it not for those who took care of them, they wouldn't survive on their own very well. So they are, in many respects, helpless creatures. They need assistance. They are kind of fragile, and they're easily picked off in a hostile world. They are weak. They are vulnerable. In a word, people, sheep are dumb. Okay? Now, how do you like that? We don't want to admit that, no. I don't, you don't. We're proud people, we're self-reliant people, we're strong people, we are self-directed people, and we think to ourselves, I don't need someone to lead me. We don't like to think of ourselves as sheep. It's not a flattering term in our common parlance. Yet that's what we're called, or I should say identified as, in virtue of this image. If one is a shepherd, there are sheep. It's just the way it is. Now, lest we bristle at this, think about it. It's not far off. It's an accurate image. The reality is that we don't know how to lead ourselves lots of time. We're not great at making decisions without guidance. We're not good at figuring out the way forward without some help. We don't always know where to turn or where to go. We do not do well fending ourselves off from all the hostile forces of the world. There's many of them. It's actually not bad. And if one wants further proof of it, think about this. Proof of the fact that we are sheep exists in the reality of what I would say the sentiments in our hearts of disappointment and guilt that are often with us if we are paying attention. Every time that I feel disappointment in this life, when I'm let down by something that I thought was going to make me happy or give me hope, if you really think about it, it's an indication that I probably have wound up in the wrong pasture, eating the wrong kind of food. Maybe not bad or wicked things, but just inadequate things. Were I really great and perfect at being self-directed, I wouldn't be disappointed. I'd always know right where to go, just who to trust, just how to be, just how to act, and I'd never mess up at all. But the fact is, I mess up all the time, and you do too. The disappointment that I feel shows me I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what to do all the time. Not only that, there is guilt, right? What is guilt? It is the product of a bad, sinful decision. If I feel guilt in my life, and at some point we all do, it's a recognition I made the wrong choice. Therefore, I am a sheep. I don't know what I am doing without help. So let's be honest and identify who we are. We are the sheep. That's the deal, okay? One can labor on this point and be disappointed in the fact, but we have to know that if we're really going to get why this gospel is so awesome. We must first start with who we are. We are sheep, okay? Now, next, part two, okay? Once I know who we are, dear sheep, dear flock, me and you, right? Well, then, this is great because, okay, yes, you are right, Father Nathan, I do need a shepherd. We do need guidance. We're not great on our own. And we clamor after them all the time. We chase after and look for and we hunger for those to guide us in this world. Leaders, okay? And the reality is, to keep up the disappointment, all right, we find ourselves disappointed in our leaders a lot of the time. Our shepherds often let us down. So it happens all the time. You know, this is anybody we place our trust in, look to for authority, look to for guidance, look to for leadership. They're always messing up in some way, shape, or form. We look to Washington with all of its difficulties, or to Madison, or to the mayor's office here in town, okay. We look to corporate heads, to the bureaucratic institutions, to the CDC. We look to Rome, we look to the Vatican, we look to pastors, we look to heads of households, we look to dads or moms or to spouses. We look to corporate entities and all the things that kind of have sway in the world. We place ourselves under all these authorities all the time, hoping we're going to be shepherded by them and led and guided well. And you know what? Usually they don't. And sometimes it's because they're flat out wicked. That's just a fact of a fallen world. But usually it's because they're just people. They're trying their best, you know. But like me, I'm just a man. You're just people. We do what we can and we make mistakes. And the reality is that our leaders often let us down. It is disappointing. So not only are we sheep, and we know that because life is full of disappointments, we are often led by disappointing shepherds. This is not good news, but it's a fact. Which brings us to the context of the gospel story, okay? John 10, right? What's happening around this scene? Well, here's the story, and it comes to bear on the whole context piece I just mentioned. In John chapter 9, we find ourselves at the Feast of Tabernacles in John's gospel, which is the fall right before Christ is executed, so called September of the year. Following spring, he's going to be killed. On the Feast of Tabernacles, what does he do in John's gospel? Famous story, he cures a blind man right in the temple, and he starts a huge argument. And right there, in the midst of the entire thing, when he shows himself to be the light and the truth and the way and the healer, all these things, the Pharisees, the temple aristocracy who are running the entire show, accuse Jesus of being a blasphemer, a lawbreaker, a violator of Abraham's covenant and the law of Moses, and they condemn him in front of all these people. And not only that, they take this poor blind man who was cured interrogate him, interrogate his parents, insult him, call him a blasphemer and an ignorant person, and they throw him out of the temple. Jesus witnesses this entire scene. When it's over with, John 10 picks up, and he says to them, the Pharisees, you know what? I am a good shepherd, you are not. This is not what it means to shepherd my people Israel. So I'm going to make a comparison, Jesus says. You see what I've done? See what you've done? I'm good, you're bad. End of story. And this whole dialogue picks up in the context of a major fight about who is the authentic leader and shepherd of the people Israel. So, being shepherded by bad rulers is not a new reality. It's been going on forever, and he steps right into the heart of it, okay? And he invites us now, just like back then, to think about who our rulers are, who shepherds us, and why we let them authority over us, and what that means, okay? That sets the tone, right, for the good shepherd image. We have to be, I dare say, depressed a little bit. Hopefully you are at this point. To understand where this is going. Because after all that's been said, then and now, in steps, okay, part three here, right, in steps, the glad tidings, the good news, the gospel as we know it in Greek and English. The good news is that we have a good shepherd. Jesus says to all of us, you know what, I understand your disappointments. I get your frustrations. I know what you're like. I understand what your rulers are often like. They're inadequate, let's face it. Even if they're decent, they try and they fail. Okay, I get all that, and you know what? He says it today so beautifully, I am the good shepherd. I am the one. I come to you, I seek you out. You don't seek me, you're the sheep. I find you, and as I do, I shepherd you, I guide you, I rule you, I help you, I move you along in life. I'm the one who is never, ever going to disappoint you. I'm the one thing. And you can put it, therefore, he says, in perspective. All the earthly things that you chase after, they're fine, but they're just earthly things. Whereas in my case, he says, I'm the one who in your prayer and your conduct with me is never, ever, ever, ever going to let you down. Think about this, then and now. He comes to us on the altar. He feeds us with himself. The very food of the Eucharist is the shepherd feeding us as sheep with his own body and his own blood. So he nourishes his flock. Before that, he washes his flock. That's what baptism is. In the confessional, he cleanses his flock over and over again. In the ordained ministry, even if we're flawed, he leads his flock. In his word, he teaches his flock. So since we don't know where we're going, he guides us. He says, because I love you, I won't lead you without any guidance. Here's my gospel. Here are the commandments. Here are the scriptures. Here are the teachings. Here are the saints' writings. Here's what the church has to say. You have guidance. You have direction. You know where you're going. You're not blind. I'm offering you a pathway. My word never falls silent. It'll exist to the end of time. You will always be in my fold if you hear my word. He lets us pray, and as we pray, we get to know his voice. What's he saying in the gospel? You know me and I know you. We know each other's voice like a sheep and shepherd. This is tremendously consoling news. In a world of all these disappointments, and let's face it, they're there, we have one in the Lord who is never disappointment. Never, ever, 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 never. And not only that, he raises the bar today because after saying he's good shepherd, which is a familiar image to those listening to him about David and Psalms and prophets, he goes to a place they've not said it before. He says, a good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. I'm going to die for you. So much do I love you, I'm going to die for my flock. Now, back in September of that year, and the feast day, they couldn't have known what he was talking about. But we, the readers and hearers, who know the end of the story. They go, oh, yeah, he's talking about his coming death and the coming spring when he's a Passover lamb for all of us. So we know what he means. I'll die for you. I dare say he invites us to do today what he wants his listeners to do back then, to make a little comparison between our current rulers of any particular capacity and the good shepherd. And I think he wants us to ask the question, would anybody that I chase after in this life or let leave in this life, would they die for me? Do they care that much about me? It's a good exercise, right? So would I don't know, somebody in Congress or the Senate die for me? Maybe. Would anybody in Madison, the Assembly, die for me? Could be. Would the mayor of West Bend, Chris, nice guy, would he die for me? Could be. I'm not sure. Law enforcement officials, you know, we held them in high regard because they put themselves in harm's way for us. They are good shepherds. But even they're not always perfect, right? So even they fail sometimes. So even those brave people are not always so brave, right? Would the head of General Motors, Ford, Subaru, die for me? No. Enemy of the DMV die for me? Unlikely. Somebody at the IRS die for me? No chance. Would anybody at the CDC and DC and bureaucracies and the scientific establishment die for me? I kind of doubt it. Anybody who runs Amazon.com or Apple Computer die for me? Absolutely not. You laugh. But the fact is, think about it, we chase after all these people. And they have all this authority over us because we give it to them. And not a one of them cares about us at all most of the time. And it's fine. It's the world we live in. Okay, sure. So we know that, and what often holds such sway over us and whose voice we're also tuned to for direction, and compare that to the one who does die for us, we think to ourselves, the rest of it just doesn't measure up. It's okay, but it's not my savior. It's held in the right perspective, you know? This is the good news, right? He comes to us and says, and every era has the same problem, right? Because every era has its bad rulers, or let's say inadequate ones, okay? We have a current batch today. They've been with us for a long time, right? Every era, he says to John chapter 10, I am the one sure thing. I'm the one sure thing. What he wants us to do, what the church wants us to do is take this in and to pray about this. And to let the gaze of our eyes and our heart and our mind land on the face of the one who looks at us with such love and says to all of us, I will never disappoint you. I will always lead you. I will die for you. I will raise you up. And as you take that in, your heart's going to be moved. You'll be full of joy. And you'll start to get at the movement of salvation. Because salvation means giving my heart to the one who wants to save me. And I'm going to do that as I realize who has found me. The Good Shepherd has found me and you and spoke to me and given his life for me. And as I know that, I'm full of joy and I begin to experience grace and power and healing. But I can't get there until I first realize I'm a helpless sheep and you are too. And my earthly leaders are inadequate. They're fine, but they're not adequate. I must go through that first to realize who the Savior really is. Good Shepherd means he's better than all the rest of them, hands down. Thank God, right? Brings us back to the opening prayer, right? Hear it again, I hope with new understanding. This is what the church wants us to understand in these beautiful movements of the heart. Knowing that we're sheep, knowing who we often chase after, knowing who God really is now, right? Here it is again. Almighty, ever-living God, lead us to a share in the joys of heaven. The humble flock may reach where the brave shepherd has gone before. That's what we want, right? To reach where he has gone before. This is how we do it, like I'm describing this morning. Almighty of living God, lead us to a share in the joys of heaven. The humble flock may reach where the brave shepherd has gone before.